morning, everyone. Talk Radio 930 WTAD, the first day of December. And it's time for the Mary Griffith Show, brought to you by Hilbing Auto Body. Remember, if it happens to you, take it to Hilbing. And Catherine Bakke Mekas is here. She just had her second little child. We're glad this is one of your first days back after maternity leave. So welcome back, and we're so glad to have you here from the Community Foundation. And I'm really thrilled because you named your baby boy Charlie, and there aren't too many Charlies in the world. That was my dad's name, my brother's name, so I'm glad there's another Charlie.
Yes, it was my husband's grandpa's name, too. So you can't go wrong with a Charlie, I don't think.
No, you can't, except if you're Charlie in the box, like the Island of Misfit Toys.
Oh,
now, tonight,
okay.
Rudolph, you'll have to watch Rudolph. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants a Charlie in the box. Everybody wants a Jack in the box. Well, December is a time to talk about the gift that keeps on giving. And today is Giving Tuesday. How appropriate that the Community Foundation would be here, because they are the aggregate umbrella for hundreds of different funds that help out our community. And if you're looking for a way to spend your charitable dollar, a gift today on Giving Tuesday to the Community Foundation would certainly be money well spent. But let's talk a little bit about December and taxes.
Mm-hmm.
This is the time of year when everybody is sitting there going, did I make any money? Did I lose any money? How am I going to offset gains? What can I do this year to be tax advantageous? And, of course, you can always put money in your IRA up till tax day, but you can't make a charitable donation after December 31st. So
that's right. That's
the deadline
right.
is definitely here. So talk a little bit about the tax advantages of giving to the Community Foundation.
Sure. So you're absolutely right. This is the time of year that our phone starts, you know, ringing a little more with people curious about different giving options. And one of those reasons that people give, and I wouldn't say it's the number one reason, but a tax advantage can be a reason that someone gives. And the Community Foundation does offer one of the best tax advantages for charitable donations available under the law. Because we are a public-supported nonprofit, we're qualified under the 501c3 revenue code. Since we're not a private foundation, we are able to offer those greater tax advantages than if you gave or established your own private foundation. So it's a really nice way that you might want to, maybe you're interested in a private foundation, you're interested in doing something to honor your family and establish something permanent, but it's a little bit different. With the Community Foundation, since it's public, you get that tax advantage, and you don't have to worry about all the back-end stuff. You get to experience the joy of giving, and we will handle all of the paperwork and the research and you know, all the things that are less fun about charitable giving.
I know that the law has changed, and there have been changes to the way that people can take charitable tax credits, but I was listening to WTAD Radio this morning, and some great expert was saying that you can get like a $300 tax credit for making almost any kind of charitable donation this year because of the COVID-19.
Mm-hmm, the CARES Act, yep.
Kind of under the CARES Act. So this would be a great way. You don't even have to itemize. You can just take that donation.
That's right. That's one of the things that people have to balance when they're thinking about charitable giving, is if they're going to itemize or if they're going to take the standard deduction. But, yeah, regardless, with that CARES Act, it's, you know, what better time to go ahead and give a little bit of a gift. And, you know, with Giving Tuesday, it's really a time we encourage people to give to any nonprofit. We're here to support our nonprofit organizations. So if you want to give directly to a nonprofit, please do. Please do, especially this year. People have been hit hard. Organizations have been hit hard. Nonprofits have been hit hard. So if you've considered giving, today is the day to do that. Please give directly to a nonprofit, or if you're interested in something a little more permanent to support those nonprofits, the Community Foundation is here with our 200 different endowment funds
that you can also make a donation.
That's right, any of them.
This has been, obviously, we keep saying it, an unusual year. Some people have actually had largesse this year. We talk a lot about those in need, and we should. I mean, we've seen the lines at the food banks. We've talked to people that run charitable organizations that say they're somewhat overwhelmed with new clients this year, people who have never asked for assistance. And yet, some industries, some people who are working, some jobs have had overtime, have had higher salaries, have had more demand, and have had a great year. Mm-hmm. And this might be the year, if you fall into that category, because we all got $1,200 whether we needed it or not. And this might be the year that you say, you know, I want to maybe, you know, level my playing field. I didn't do anything wrong to have a great year. It just happens sometimes. Mm-hmm. But this year, if ever I could give back, this is the year.
That's right. And there's lots of different ways to give back at the Community Foundation. So I think there's a misperception or a misconception sometimes that you have to be very wealthy to establish an endowment fund. You know, oh, that's not for me. That's for the elite or something like that. But that is absolutely not the case. You don't have to even establish a fund to give to the Community Foundation. Because we have 200 different funds, anybody is bound to find an endowment fund, a charitable fund that fits with their own passions or purposes. We hold a great number of endowments for specific nonprofits. So if you love the community theater or the Humane Society, we have endowment funds for those. So when you give a gift, it's going to combine with the gifts of other donors, and it's just going to strengthen that pool, and it's just going to grow and grow and grow. So your gift is forever.
And that is true. When you give to the Community Foundation, your gift is forever, because they are using only the interest and earnings off of your gift to be dispersed. And so that gift stays there, and make sure that not-for-profit is strong in years to come. There is, I think, a perception that you have to be fabulously wealthy to start a fund in the Community Foundation. I can attest to that this year, because I started a fund, which I've been trying to get done for 10 years, finally got it done, the Charlie and Gina Griffith Foundation. And trust me, we're not fabulously wealthy. But I wanted to make sure that my mother and father's lives and the things they were interested in were remembered, since they don't have any grandkids. After my brother and I go away, their memory will start to fade. And I wanted to make sure that the good lessons they taught me about giving to charities would be continued on far past our lifetime, my brother and I. And so I would like to say that you do not have to be fabulously wealthy to start a fund at the Community Foundation. It's really very simple and easy to do. You make it very easy, but it is something that takes a little bit of work and a little bit of thinking. And if you're not going to do that, you can always just give a gift to, like you said, an existing fund. So
That's
it's
right.
Always great.
And I'm glad you mentioned it does take a little bit of planning. You know, some folks, you know, might have $15,000 sitting in their checking account and they write a check and that's it. But there are different ways to give. So we always encourage people to consult with their financial planners, their tax advisors, to figure out what the best asset to give is. So it could be a cash. Could be a check. You could go online and use PayPal. But we also accept securities and other appreciated assets. You could use your IRA to make a gift, and that has some benefits, too, if you're 70 and a half or older. And then a unique way to give is if you're this is a big agricultural area. If you're a farmer and you have grain, we accept grain. Now, don't bring it to our parking lot and dump it on our parking lot, but there is a way to give grain, and we receive the proceeds of that sale, and you receive tax benefits off that.
Okay, I'm going to plant one wheat plant next year, and I'm going to bring my wheat stalk in and put it in the foundation, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
No. I'll talk to my board about it.
But the local elevator can help you
yes.
with that. That is done for a lot of different charities, including the Community Foundation. The other thing that we try to do this time of year is to give the gift that is impossible for somebody to buy for on your list, because, frankly, they have everything. And they have enough money to buy whatever they want. And they'd rather probably buy it themselves than you trying to guess what color sweater and what size. So there are always people who it's very difficult to buy a gift for. But you can make a gift to the Community Foundation in their name.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can feel real good about that the whole year long.
Yeah, we have several donors who choose to do that. Just a couple of years ago, we had the grandchild of one of our fund founders, you know, kind of randomly, we had never, you know, heard from her. She sent a check in. And so we called her to kind of ask her, you know, what made you think of us? We didn't recognize the last name. And we found out, you know, she lived out of town, but we found out that her grandfather had established a fund for the local YMCA here because it was so important to the foundation of his childhood, his life. And so she and her sister you know, he's got everything. He doesn't, you know, the things that are important to him aren't material at this point. And so they decided to make a Christmas gift in his name to strengthen his fund that he started. And so we were able to, you know, produce a card to send to the fund founder, to send to her grandpa, to say that a gift has been made by so-and-so to strengthen his fund. And it was just way more special that way.
Oh, absolutely. And so if you've got somebody on your gift-giving list that loves music or loves the arts or loves science, there is a way to do that. Talk a little bit more, Catherine, about this time crunch now with December coming up about making gifts. It is a good year to make a gift.
It is. It is. And, you know, it's December 1st, so you've got, 30 days to make a gift in 2020. And we mentioned before the CARES Act is going to allow you to receive that tax benefit. So we certainly encourage folks to think about that and get that $300 credit for their taxes. But, you know, whether you want to just make a simple gift to a fund, plenty of time to do that, right? We've got 31 days. You can go online and use PayPal. You can write a check. You can pop into the office. We encourage you to call first because we're trying to work remotely during this crazy time. So there's plenty of time for that. We just ask you you got to make sure that your check, if you're mailing it, it's postmarked by December 31st. Now, if you want to establish a fund, we are getting down to the wire a little bit here. However, there is still time. We can do it.
They can do it.
We can do it. If there's a will, there's a way.
You better call today. It's going to be tough. I mean, it doesn't, trust me, just because it took me 13 years doesn't mean it takes 13
no,
years.
No, I think the fastest, you know, it takes some people 13 years to establish a fund, and that's fine because it is a big decision. But I think the fastest fund I've ever established, I think last year someone called the week before Christmas and wanted to establish a fund, and I said, we can do it. Let's get it done.
And
we did.
And they can. Well, give out your website and all that good stuff because we're going to say goodbye to you. We've got John Simon hanging on the phone, and we want to get to COVID-19.
Yes, okay.
Because we haven't talked about that enough this year.
The website where you can find more information and how to give and different advantages, explore a little bit more, is www.mycommunityfoundation.org. Or give us a call. Any five of us love to talk. So 217-222-1237.
Okay. Thank you very much. Congratulations, new mom. Make sure you watch Rudolph tonight now.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks, Mary.
John Simon, Emergency Services Director, my guest next. We're back, Talk Radio 930 WTAD. I'm Mary Griffith, and we are joined on the phone lines this morning by John Simon, who's Director of Emergency Services here in Adams County. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Mary. How are you?
I am great. Let's get right to it. I know that Jared Welch was supposed to be my guest this morning, but he had to take a call about vaccination. So we're actually talking about vaccine delivery in the tri-states. Is this what the COVID-19 rapid testing is all about, kind of a dress rehearsal for when people might have to drive up in cars and get a vaccine?
Well, yeah, I think that from a logistical standpoint, from some community preparation, it certainly is a dress rehearsal from our angle on it. But I think that the rapid testing is quite a bit more than that, really, as we look at kind of where we've been over the last 2 weeks. You know, our positivity rate and the number of cases was on the climb a couple of weeks ago. And this gives our community something that we can do, you know, well, positively to improve those numbers. A little bit of a play on words, I suppose, there. But nonetheless, what we've seen is we've been seeing a drop. And I guess what I want to relate to that real quick is how do those two correlate? And while, you know, statisticians would probably say, well, we need, you know, more data to really be able to do a scientific analysis of it. But I think it can boil down to this. We were on a continued climb because we knew that tests took so long to get results to people. And people want to do the right thing if they know they are positive and have it. So it was just getting them those results, and they were interacting with more people before they got their results. So in this case, they're able to get results oftentimes within the hour, and that, you know, then that people go home and they stop the spread. So really, this testing effort has been about what can we do to reduce the spread here in our area?
Obviously, when you're talking about mathematical statistics, if only 100 people get tested, 50 of them have symptoms and are already sick, you're going to have a positive test rate of at least 50% probably. Whereas
yep.
if you test 10,000 people and only 50 of them appear to be sick, you've got a much less. So this was a way to also show how widespread it was in Adams County. But not just in Adams County, because this, of course, you tested people from all over. That's why the Adams County positive test rate, which is only like 4.75%, is lower now than the test rate you're getting at the Shopko site, which is
yep.
what, about 11%?
We're pushing right about 11%, overall. But, Mary, one of the things that we have to remember is we, and I think when we look back over the last, 8 or 9 months, we've proven this time and time again, we don't live in a bubble. And so people across our region, they travel here to, Quincy and Adams County, whether it's for work or whether it's to shop or visit friends or go out to eat, whatever the case may be. And so really this is a regional issue. It's not net, it's not divided by borders. And so when we look at our approach to that, we have to give consideration to that. And that's what this testing site has done. And in testing people from all across the region and work those cases. In essence, we have been driving down the entire region numbers as well, because again, early results, and if people do the right thing and once they know they have it and go home and stay home, ultimately that will reduce the spread a lot faster.
Let's turn our attention now to hospitals and hospital capacity. We know that Scotland County Hospital in Memphis is, filled to the brim. Blessing Hospital took a patient out of the St. Louis metro area that was not COVID, that needed emergency medical attention, critical care attention. I've heard conflicting reports. Some people say, oh, there's plenty of beds at Blessing Hospital. And the official report is, no, our capacity is, we're maybe down to 10%. What is the truth? I mean, I've heard people, national news stories, not locally, say, COVID didn't kill my sister. My sister died of a heart attack because she couldn't get an ambulance to take her to the hospital because so many COVID patients were calling for ambulances. So what is the state of our healthcare emergency medical services and Blessing Hospital and Hannibal Regional Hospital capacity?
Mary, that's a whole bunch of questions all wrapped up into one. We could probably spend the whole time segment here on that, but a couple of things I want to hit right off the bat. As you know, I'm also the chief for our emergency medical systems here in the county as well, and our paramedics and EMTs, they've been at this since the early days of March, and not only preparing for it but also treating and responding to COVID patients, but as well all the rest of the emergency medical needs of the community, and that has never wavered. While we certainly have went through our times of having short staff because our own staff has been in quarantine for a variety of different reasons, we've always been able to maintain our staffing levels and continue to do so. We have we have some contingency plans if we were low on staffing, but so far the good news is we haven't had to use that. When we look at it's routine for us to transfer patients to other hospitals around the region. I wouldn't say that it is as routine to bring a patient from a larger metropolitan area such as St. Louis into Blessing, but it's not 100% unheard of either. And so it's really about making sure that there's capacity. Now, when we talk about capacity within the hospital, first and foremost, I want the hospital officials to respond to that, largely because it changes sometimes on a minute-by-minute basis, but definitely on an hour-by-hour basis. Patients are always being discharged, and patients are always being admitted. But we do have capacity here But when we look at the number one factor of capacity, it's staffing. It's having enough nursing staff, having enough physicians in order to be able to adequately see and treat all patients, not just COVID patients. I think Blessing Hospital has done an excellent job of ensuring that they have capacity. But the fact of the matter is every year, even during normal flu season, we get either at or near capacity. And I think the thing that is concerning in this scenario from an emergency management perspective is that we haven't even hit the height of, well, let's call it normal flu season, and we're seeing those full capacities. So the concern is if we continue on that pathway of increasing patient load, and we add on to that normal flu season as we go through December and into January, what will that look like? We have good plans, but these are the concerning perspectives that we look at as planners to make sure that we have the resources to respond to the community's need.
Well, I have a friend who had a stroke and is in the hospital. Of course, that has nothing to do with COVID-19. I asked my friend, "Are you feel like you're getting a good level of care? Is there enough attention to you?" And friend said, "Oh, absolutely. I feel very, confident that at Blessing Hospital I'm getting all the attention and care I need." Again, this is a person who is not a COVID-related patient. So as the director of our ambulance service, as the director of someone who sees the first line response, you don't feel that we have ever had a moment where somebody's life was put in jeopardy because there was too much attention. Well, there's not ever too much attention to COVID, but attention to COVID when other things then had to be put on the back burner. I mean, after all, overwhelming a system, have we ever been overwhelmed?
No, I don't think we've seen that. And Mary, I'm going to attribute that, 100% to, our paramedics and our EMTs, our doctors and our nurses, everybody that makes that system work on a daily basis. Whether it's, they are making sure that they, put even more effort forward to make sure that that system fails or doesn't fail, and so really that's where that credit goes, is because if there's a hole, they make sure that or a gap, they step up and make sure that we fill it and that we keep our patients first.
We're talking with John Simon, the Director of Emergency Medical Services and Emergency Services for Adams County. John, let's get back to there for a while, the news reports, and we were getting them from experts, were saying the worst is yet to come. The worst is yet to come. Now we're a little bit bracing for a post-Thanksgiving and even a post-Christmas COVID surge. Do you feel that's going to happen locally, or do you think local people heeded advice and were safe around Thanksgiving? Because we really won't know that. We really don't know that today. We won't know that for probably a week or two.
Right, Mary. Those results are always delayed, probably usually at least 5 to 7 days. So we would expect to start to see some of those cases occurring maybe around Thursday, Friday of this week. But I think that there's a couple of important factors that I turn to. One, the best answer I can give you right now is quite honestly, we don't know. And part of what we've seen through this disease migration is we don't necessarily know until we see it. But that being said, I think that we have proactively done some things here in our region and Quincy and Adams County to help reduce that spread. And I want to look back at, the rapid testing site that we had we had operational last week. We still have it operating. Today we're going to open here in about 15 minutes here at 33rd and Broadway. But I want to talk a little bit about the Know Before You Go campaign that we launched prior to Thanksgiving. And our focus was we weren't encouraging large gatherings, but we also know that families are going to get together, and they have that that need, and that's a part of our community fabric, and is going to go on. And so the campaign was driven about, you know, know before you go. Before you go visit, you know, with friends and family and your grandma, is know if you're positive. And so we did a lot of that. We did 1,400 tests the day before Thanksgiving. And so we also pulled out 126 people who were positive on that day alone. And so if we look at those numbers and we correlate that to reality, that was 126 people that more than likely didn't spread COVID to their friends and family. And we'll see that result in reduced numbers in the weeks to come.
Okay, let me close with this because I know you're very busy and I want to get you off air and back to your job, and I appreciate your time today.
I appreciate having me on.
We did that great thing, you know, before Thanksgiving, know before you go. And now doctors say, well, you really have to wait about a week after you've been at Thanksgiving to get tested. So why are we shutting down our rapid testing site on Friday when on Thursday and Friday, people who went somewhere for Thanksgiving will probably want to be tested? Is it just a matter of money? Is it manpower? Why don't we just have rapid testing available all the time?
Well, you know, interesting, and I'm glad you asked that question because we never really did get there in our conversation. So I'm glad you asked it. We're not shutting down, and that is when the schedule ends that is published now. We wanted to really see how our demand held. We were authorized because this is probably a long answer to a fairly simple question, but we were provided for an off-label use of the Binex rapid tests. And what I mean by that is they were designed for symptomatic people. But in reality, we have still found with this test people who didn't have any symptoms at all that were positive. Now, specifically to, you know, shutting down, we're not going to shut down. We're going to have some modified hours. We're going to keep going with this, but we're retooling our staff. We're bringing in some different health department personnel, trying to get our city and county workers that we repurposed 2 weeks ago for this project back to their normal jobs. And so it'll have a little bit of a different staffing pattern to it, a little bit different hours. We're still working through those this week. But this project is going to go on throughout the month of December and as we prepare for Christmas. And on into the new year. So while we haven't 100% solidified on what exactly that the hours are, it's going to continue, Mary.
Okay, well, that's good news to hear. And I know that a lot of city workers have been repurposed, and it's cost. The test may be free, but it's free to the people getting the test. It's definitely not a free test. John, we'll have to have you back on again. I do appreciate your time today, and thank you so much. We'll need to be in touch a little bit more closely before Christmas, and maybe we'll put another push out for this know before you go. That would be fantastic. Thank you very much for the hard work you do, and my best to all of your staff and all the volunteers.
Thank you, Mary. You have a great day, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.